deal with our personal responsibilities. And then I also have the brought along the leadership who manages the significant operations of SARS. I will ask them very quickly, just from my furthest left, to introduce themselves so that you know which area of the business they represent. Starting with Nasilia. At the bottom in Bayer.
I'm Bayer Sturon. I'm the Acting Chief Officer for Customs and Excise.
I'm Takalem Segwa from Human Capital and Development.
I'm Narcisio Makwakwa, acting head for the Large Business Center and High Net Worth Individuals.
Joam Lenza, looking after enforcement.
Sobantu Nangalavo, acting group executive employee relations.
Dan Zulu, acting chief officer for business and individual taxes.
It's Mark Kingan within the Office of the Commissioner.
Jonathan Makhubu, I'm responsible for finance.
Mike Zampigeni in the Office of the Commissioner.
Thank you. And as one of the members said, we should all get Oscars for acting. And it's one of the unfortunate situations where we find ourselves in chair is that, in fact, only our chief financial officer is permanent in his position because of various circumstances that the committee is aware of. We have a number of people in acting positions, but hopefully after the minister's budget announcement later this month and after we've resolved some of the issues that relate to senior executives, we will be able to consolidate the leadership at SARS, and I'm quite excited to engage that process. I think suffice to say the point the Deputy Minister made is that we are humbled in our sense of awareness that if SARS fails, our democracy is in trouble. And so this is not a sense of self-importance, this is a sense of understanding how central the work we do is to the success of our democracy, and in fact, more than anything, gives us a sense that the work we do serves a higher purpose, which is enable government to respond to the legitimate needs for goods and services to our people. Today, I will not spend too much time on the specific detail of the Nugent, so-called Nugent Commission. We have had a separate session on that. But happy to take questions later on, Chair, if any of the members may have specific questions in that regard. But I think it's helpful to remind ourselves that the period that we're reporting on, that this process was smack bang in the middle of this with all its attendant challenges that it presented within SARS. But notwithstanding that, I think, you know, we often focus on the bad news and we forget that to have delivered the revenue and the deliverables that SARS did in the end deliver still required thousands of men and women, honest, hardworking men and women, to come to work every day to do their best, and that has delivered the results that we will share with you, notwithstanding all the challenges that we will also, with frankness, report on. And to those men and women, I certainly want to express an appreciation for the work that we do and continue to do. In summary, therefore, our main mandate, which is to collect revenue, given the conditions that the Deputy Minister referred to, in the end, SARS collected around about 1.288 trillion rand against a revised estimate of 1.3, which left us with a shortfall of 14.5 billion, or some 1.1 negative variance against the revised estimate. Against the printed estimate, which was originally based on the assumptions of economic growth and other factors, which then didn't materialize, we undercollected by 57.3 billion, or some -4.3. But to give you a real sense of what that means in relative terms, from a growth perspective, it's mindful to note that the 1.288 trillion did represent a growth of 5.9, almost 6% of revenue growth compared to year-on-year in an environment that only produced a nominal growth of 4.8%. So the revenue growth did outperform the economy, and that's a function of the compliance activity, obviously, that SARS is mandated to deliver. That is the summary. And we will take the committee through each of the outcomes under each of those objectives. But in summary, you can see that those were the objectives that we achieved, those that we are in the amber range, and then those that we didn't achieve at all, which is the 12 or 36% in red. If I can go through this, and I will go through the presentation very quickly, and when we get to question and answers, my colleagues will have an opportunity to respond to specific questions as I direct it to them. But suffice it to say that in customs, our result was positive, and that was because also of a specific chapters within the customs mandate that produced a positive result, such as, for example, original equipment, components and machinery that is imported, that then present the opportunity for SARS to collect customs revenue. The audit coverage, you'll see there that we conducted an audit of 1,287 excise clients, which again was a positive result. We are doing more work to focus on the quality of the audit outcomes so that we don't just report a number of audits but also focus on the quality, because that's ultimately the return on the effort. It's not the number of audits that are conducted but rather the quality of those audits. Then Interfront, which is a 100% SARS-owned company that delivers certain IT technology services, received a clean audit report. Continuing with outcome one, or compliance, effectively in terms of the percentage of goods that we have targeted for reducing compliance, we achieved 324,324 instances out of a total of just over 7 million declarations. So I must explain why a higher number of audits we consider as a negative performance. Because you can imagine that customs has to balance trade facilitation with customs enforcement. And the worst possible expression thereof is if we stop everything that comes through the border and frustrate every trader or traveler, even the honest ones. So the intelligent work that we have to do here is proper risk profiling and proper risk assessment, and therefore the appropriate case selection, which means that we will target the highest risk travelers and traders for the best possible outcome. You will recall when we use the language of voluntary compliance, that's in line with voluntary compliance. So the fact that we did more audits, we actually consider as not achieving the strategic objective that we set out for ourselves, and I thought I should just explain that. We are continuing to work on our risk rules so that we actually end up stopping fewer people but managing our risk better. The next one is also, on reflection, a measure that doesn't really help. And so In the following version of our report, we will amend this measure. But this was an underachievement because it looks at the percentage of trade that came from preferred traders as a percentage of the total volume of trade. Now, it's not actually correct to compare it to the total volume of trade. What one should be measuring here is how effectively are we helping traders to become accredited. Again, in line with our strategic intent objective, the more we can accredit traders, the lower the compliance burden is for them and for the state. And so last year, we actually added 35 clients onto our base of 55, and what we should be measuring is what is the percentage of traders as a function of our total trader base, rather than as a function of total trade volume. Because trade volume is influenced by other factors, not necessarily by the universe. And so this wasn't really a useful measure, but we report on it in the interest of transparency, but we will adjust this measure as we go forward. There's a number of these measures that we put an asterisk in there just to help the committee understand where we believe that measures don't really make sense. Whether or not we achieve them is besides the point. Then moving on to outcome two, where we again look at increased tax compliance. There we measure a percentage of payment compliance for pay as you earn, and there we have achieved this. And this is largely achieved under tax compliance because these are really managed on our behalf by employers, and clearly that's quite an important work. The audit coverage of almost 1.6 million taxpayers, I'm going to make the same comment there. Even though we achieved the number of audits that we set out to achieve, the real question you should be asking us is what is the quality of those audits, what is the effect and the impact of those audits, and for some reason we're not reporting on that. And those are some of the improvements that we want to make in our next report, is to focus on the outcome rather than just the instances that we manage. And we thought we'd share that with you transparently, but also to signpost how we want to improve the quality of our reporting. In terms of CIT payment compliance and VIT, I can deal with both of them combined. There we have almost achieved it. And in fact, if you look at the VAT compliance, 88.15 versus 88.4, it's effectively we have achieved it. There, in both those instances, we find that the condition of the economy has placed a number of companies into cash flow challenges, and this is easy money that they then retain in their cash registers rather than handing it over to SARS, and they get themselves into trouble and then would either have to approach us for deferred payment arrangements, and sometimes they go out of business before they pay the money, and so those monies are lost to the state. And so you can see that both in case of CIT, which is payment on profit, and VAT, which is an advance payment by taxpayers or customers on behalf of SARS, collected on behalf of SARS, we feel that this money is always at risk because it provides easy cash flow for businesses. On the total revenue collected for the year, again, there we find that the poor performance, particularly from large businesses, has been impacted specifically by a number of issues, but two specific issues is provisions for bad debt, which obviously then reduces the accounting profit of a company, and companies pay tax on accounting profit. And so this is just an additional provision that companies can make in order to comply with the accounting regulation IFRS 9, and then also increased deductions due to capital-related expenditure. And we found that in last year, those two were the major reasons why companies produced reported lower profits and therefore lower revenues. The debt-to-revenue ratio again is one of those indicators where we believe we should find a better way of reporting this. But to give you a sense of what we're trying to report here is when an assessment is raised by SARS, that then creates a legal debt in favor of the state, payable by the taxpayer. And it remains payable until it's collected. And from that point onward, it's actually just debt. And the same commercial dynamics around debt has to be managed. What that means is the simple theory of debt is that if it's not under dispute, that is, then the sooner you collect it, the better. The longer you wait to collect it, the harder it is to collect it. And so that means that SARS has to get better at first of all sending reminders to taxpayers that their debt is due in 20 days' time or in 2 weeks' time, because psychologically we from our experience, knows that it raises the probability that taxpayers will pay that debt. And then secondly, if the debt isn't paid on the date that it's due, to immediately follow that up and continue to place pressure on taxpayers to pay that debt. So we need to find a better way to measure SARS's ability to manage that debt. One of the reasons why this debt is also increased is that a number of the assessments that are raised by our auditors relate to fraudulent returns. So a taxpayer puts in a fraudulent return that would create a debt that is not recoverable, really. And so we've seen an increase in the last year with fraudulent returns. And basically fraudulent returns are created by taxpayers in order to fleece the state, either by a lot of it by claiming refunds that are not legitimately due to them, as opposed to underpaying taxes that are due to them. This is getting money from the state, not just withholding money that is due to the state, which is an out-and-out crime, and it's a concern that we've registered before. Filing compliance, so these three go together, and this is really where when a taxpayer is supposed to submit a return when it is due and it's not submitted, and we then have to follow that up. And so here we report a 52% in terms of VAT against the target of 58, 24% in terms of CIT against 46. That one in particular, well, let me go to the VAT one first. The VAT one, we experience an unintended consequence, having made it easier for companies to register for VAT. So maybe just some background. Because VAT has a high potential for refunds, for claims, the registration requirement for VAT is typically harder than for other tax types. And we have, again, balanced service with enforcement. And in the interest of improving our service, we have made it a little bit easier for taxpayers to register for VAT. And when you make it easier for honest taxpayers, you unfortunately also make it easy for fraudulent taxpayers. And so we found quite a number of taxpayers who register for VAT but then don't really submit their returns as they should, because in many cases they are not active businesses. They're just created there as a placeholder for some fraudulent activity. So something that was meant to provide better service has actually come back and incurred a risk cost, so we need to review that. In terms of CIT, there we have underperformed because we changed the base against which that was measured, and not the absolute number. And in PIT, because we have are reliant on third-party data, We often then also find that employers who do not provide the third-party data to us by not submitting up on time then create a downstream challenge for the employees who wish to file. Debtor days links to the earlier comment around debt, so I'm not going to repeat my explanation there. It's the same explanation and a measure that we need to have a look at. PIT payment compliance, this is largely again a reflection of the economy, where we find a higher level of payment defaults and requests for payment deferments, which we are allowed to do in terms of the Tax Administration Act. And again, it is a similar. So you'll see across the board, we've had an underperformance in areas that relates to financial, either money that the taxpayer owes us, and therefore they don't file, because that would have to declare how much money they owe us, and that creates a collectible debt on our part, and also an underachievement in collecting debt that is due from taxpayers. And so you can see where the areas of underperformance is wherever it relates to collecting money from taxpayers. That's just a summary of our performance highlights. It gives you a sense of our register and how it is made up of 26.5 million registrants. And I must add here that these aren't unique registrants, because someone who is registered for Pay As You Earn could be the same company that's registered for CIT or that's registered for VAT or Customs. So these aren't unique registrants. These are not unique taxpayers. They are actually more 26.5 million registrations rather than taxpayers. We need to do more work to find the unique number of taxpayers on our register. This is just a visual of some of the enforcement highlights. I think I want to point out on this page something that we referred to earlier on in our last meeting with you, that on customs of the 3.7 billion value of goods that we seized, which comprised some 6,828 instances of interventions. You can see on the right side the breakdown of about 892 instances of just drugs to the value of 535 million, which clearly is very harmful because the abuse of the substances lead to a whole lot of other social and other challenges downstream. Moving to outcome three, which is the ease and fairness of doing business. There we have an overachievement, or at least an achievement, against the deliverables we set out. Our IT systems was up almost 100% of the time. And this, you know, specifically given that, you know, we have had some public issue around this and around the stability and the reliability of our systems. And also, you will know that for various reasons, we have also slowed down the investment in the modernization journey. But by all accounts, that systems uptime is a significant achievement. An area where we would like to do better, which is a journey of ease and simplicity, is to get more people to convert from manual branch-based filing to use our online service, because we actually do make a significant investment there. So whilst we achieved what we set out to do, our own internal ambition is to be significantly more successful than simply 55%. The processing time, I think, also speaks to the integrity of the assessment. Artificial intelligence and use of third-party data that we put in here, and the current filing season, you will see an improvement on that, but for last year, we've achieved an average time of 0.22 of a day, which is less than a day, and in fact, for many taxpayers with simple returns, that would be literally a few seconds. CIT equally so, and that's again made possible because of the electronic e-filing. Our resolution of the contact center again is one of those less useful indicators, because we don't really we're not really sufficiently clear on what a resolution means. So we really should disaggregate what is the kind of queries that come into our contact center, and our success is really measured by a total resolution of the most complicated query that comes via that. So we will have a look at that as well as how we measure customer satisfaction. But for now, we'll take the indicators as reported. That is a little bit more difficult in terms of turnaround time, and a significant contributor to this, which is actually not always in our control, is that we don't always have valid banking details from taxpayers. And again, because of some of the publicity around VAT refunds, the committee will know how big a risk it is if we don't have an absolute certainty that a particular taxpayer has given us the correct bank account details, because once we pay the money, it becomes our risk. And therefore, we have a high reliance on taxpayers in this regard. This is a good one slide to give you a sense of the number of instances that we have contact with the taxpayers, and you'll see just in terms of submissions, 17 million, in terms of payments, 19 million, in terms of walk-ins into our branch, 6.5 million, 4.6 calls, 7.1 million customs interventions, and those are all mostly real-time and many of them online. So if you add all these interventions, you get a sense of the level of interaction that SARS has with its taxpayers is fairly, fairly high, literally running into tens of millions of instances. Of that, 38,000. Now, I must say, every complaint is a complaint to many, but it helps you to see in the context of tens of millions of interactions, 38,000 complaints that we have received, as well as a further 4,300 complaints that was escalated to the Ombudsman. This is just, again, another slide that gives you a summary of some of the things I've already referred to. Referring to outcome number four, which is cost effectiveness, there we have achieved a ratio of 0.84 against a target of 0.92. Again, ironically, that shows an overachievement, but it's not an overachievement of our own making. That really is a reflection of the financial constraints under which SARS had to operate last year and the fact that Treasury reduced our allocation significantly. And our aim is obviously, in order to build the future SARS, invest in the technology, invest in systems, build the necessary capability, we believe that for the next few years, we should be closer to a cost-to-revenue ratio of about 1%. I I think I've spoken to those notes. There's just some performance. Again, it's just a visual of the stuff I've already shared with you. Moving on to the fifth outcome, in terms of leadership effectiveness, we score 88% versus a target of, 88.5 versus 88. But again, Chair, you have to ask yourself, what does this mean? You know, and I can't sit here and tell you I know exactly what that means. So it's, again, one of those measures that we have to review in order to give you a better sense and assurance of the true strength of our leadership bench. And I don't think that that necessarily is a helpful measure. But we committed to it a year ago, so we reported on it. Employment equity, there we have underachieved. And there, one of the significant contributors were we were just not able to replace people who left. And then in terms of employment equity, at management level, we realized a target of just over 49%. But again, as can be seen by our representation here today, we shouldn't be patting ourselves on the back and declaring victory as far as gender representativity is concerned. Disability, again, affected by the fact that we weren't able to report to appoint people. The public opinion index is an interesting one. It's a very important measure for us, but this was smack bang in the middle of the very public and very ugly display of events that took place under the so-called Nugent Commission. And we shouldn't be surprised, therefore, that the public's opinion, confidence, and trust in SARS was one of the casualties of that process. In terms of BEE, there we've achieved what we set out to do in terms of giving a percentage of our business to black women-owned businesses. Again, we set out what we achieved. We achieved what we set out there. In terms of our AG report, as you had been reported to by the Auditor General yesterday, whilst we received no qualification on our report, there was a number of findings specifically related to procurement that is of concern and that I am sure we will come back to later in the presentation. But there's just a bit of color to that. As I said, a lot of that related to supply chain management or procurement, and the non-compliance in that, which resulted in irregular expenditure, mainly because of the way we set out technical evaluation criteria at the RFP phase, that the criticism there is it's not a sufficient level of detail that we apply during the evaluation process. And therefore, in terms of the procurement regulations, it is felt that it may compromise a particular potential supplier who is measuring a higher level or a less detailed evaluation criteria than what we actually measure at the point of the award. And the second one is not obtaining approvals from National Treasury where there is a variation to an existing order. The affected procurement instances there have subsequently been condoned, but obviously this speaks to the audit finding at the time that the AG conducted the audit. Other procurement issues that resulted in defined as irregular expenditure was a specific instance of reporting to the BEE Commission. A second one was a deviation with the OEM without the necessary approval from National Treasury. A third one had to do with shortening of the tender period where the Treasury didn't think that the urgency necessarily warranted a shorter period. A fourth one was the failure to publish awards with prices on our website. And then the next one was around the way we performance manage specific contractors to deliver what is procured. There was one instance of a service provider that was appointed without a contract in place. And then the last one was bid specification committee and evaluations that had certain administration issues with relation to appointments and other detail. The most significant value-based issues that was raised are things that are very public. The first one relates to the Bain contract, and you will know that we had subsequently recovered the money that was paid by Bain, but for the period under review, it still is considered to be irregular in the way that it was procured, and this was an instance that happened actually not in the last financial year. It happened before that, in the December 2015 to June 2016 period. The second one relates to the Gartner. That's also public. We have a difference of opinion with Gartner, whereas they believe that they delivered value for money. We are of a different opinion, given the fact that this related to the way we communicated our requirements by a third party, which is quite frankly irregular. And this also related to the period of 2016. The Grant Thornton matter was also related to a value for money issue. And then there was a number of goods and services that was affected, and the values are stated on the page. Let me just quickly say, on the Bain issue, we are continuing to pursue that for other potential civil or criminal claims. In Gartner, we've been very public about our view. In fact, last week I have a request from Gartner to meet with us because they are concerned about the statements we are making in public and want to meet with us to try and find resolution. With Grant Thornton, just remind me, Johnson, where are you with that one?
With Grant Thornton, the entity that we contracted with had since been liquidated. Grant Thornton was sold to Susan Zalubo Kobota and to BDO, and the entity that we had contracted with is in limbo in terms of the two. However, we are seeking a legal opinion how to actually deal with the defunct entity and who should take accountability in as far as that one is concerned. Thank you.
In as far as consequences to employees, you will know that the Bain contract under the former commissioner is no longer in our employment. The Gartner issue, also under the previous leadership, senior leadership of SARS, is no longer in our employment. But we can give the committee the assurance that we are continuing to look at instances where we may still have employees who relate to some of these expenditures, not necessarily irregular, but certainly wasteful expenditures, in order to address it appropriately. Lastly, then, revenue performance. In terms of our performance review, we've actually shared this up front, the flavor thereof, under governance and risk. Again, this relates largely to the state of SARS at the moment. We've also covered this previously, but it bears note to just point out that the extent of the failure, both in terms of governance and integrity processes, we are still suffering of the residue of that, and I can't sit here and honestly say that all of these issues have been attended to. Some of them are soft issues that relate to values and culture, and some of that relates to skills and capability that we've lost that we have to rebuild, and others relate to organizational arrangements, committees, terms of references, and other instruments that will improve over time the governance environment in SARS. under human capital, again, whilst we believe that in certain senses we have stabilized and have slowed down the losses that we've seen in the earlier years, we still, again, have deep concerns about the mix of our staff, the level of competence and capability across the organization, starting from leadership and particularly focusing on technical issues. The next slide gives you just a bit of more sense behind that. Of the just over 3,000 employees that we've lost in the last 5 years, there's about 1,000 employees that are vacancies that we are not able to fill, and many of them, as I said, in areas where we have deep need in audit investigation areas. And then, as I said, the work of rebuilding trust, improving the morale, is work. Just on Wednesday, I met with some of our labor colleagues again, and they've expressed their concern that some of these dynamics still persist in the organization. And some of them, unfortunately, still maintained by various levels of management that have developed certain habits and behaviors that we have to continuously call out. I think the last bullet point is just to say that we are also addressing the 53 employees who are currently on suspension, and some of them have been for more than 2 years, and you would have to ask yourself, why would you have someone on suspense for 2 years? Why would you not resolve it one way or the other? That just gives you a bit more of a sense of the per year. So you'll see there, in the period 2014, we've lost 565, and it's slowed down now to the present level last year, where we lost 355. And hopefully, we can slow down the attrition, but also ensure that we have the right skills mix. I think I'm going to pause here and ask my CFO to talk through these slides.
Chair and members, you will understand that from our financial point of view, we've had an engagement with the AG, an annual audit. But maybe before I get into the engagement with the AG, I think it's important that I just stress out that we work on a grant system in terms of the financials that we receive from the AG, and that grant system would have yielded around 10 billion rand in the current year. In terms of how that has been utilized within our organization, which would have been a subject of the audit from an AG point of view, 70% of that grant went into employee costs. This is in page 56 of our report, annual report. So a heavy loading of our operational costs towards employee costs. What we are trying to do going forward, as the Commissioner would have briefed you in the last engagement, is that we are moving more towards knowledge workers going into the future, so that 70% is likely to shift from clerical workers into more of knowledge workers. Furthermore, of that 10 billion rand that we got in the year under review, 10.1% went into professional services, 8% went into administrative expenses, and operational leases covered 5%, and other expenses around 0.5. The second bullet point speaks to issues that we have noticed around issues with compliance to legislation. Two instances. One is the SARS Act that the AG found that we had not complied with Section 18.3 of the SARS Act, and we have since gotten a number of opinions around the interpretation of that provisions of the SARS Act. This would have specifically related to about 17-18 million rand in the irregular expenditure sheet that you have under note number 41 on page 172 of our annual report, and that related to executives or senior leaders that were appointed without ministerial approval, and that was seen to have contravened the SARS Act, and hence the issue of legislative or legal non-compliance that the AG has raised. As the Commissioner said earlier on, there is a number of issues that pertain to supply chain prescripts, and it's important to note, Chair, that where we talk about supply chain prescripts, we are in particular reflecting to about three or four instances that led to the irregular expenditure, where in the main, the technical evaluation criteria that gets given to bidders is not detailed enough in relation to what is then used to evaluate those tenders. Not that the evaluation of those tenders is not clear inside the organization, it's what is shared with the service providers. What have we done on that front? We have actually tallied all those transactions that suffered that flaw, and we are in the process of approaching National Treasury to condone those transactions. Our sense is that if we don't do that, those transactions will keep on coming year after year, because some of those contracts are still ongoing. So if you don't get to condone them, you continue to face an ongoing irregular expenditure year in and year out. Indeed, there are other reports that we've referred to in terms of the Commission of Inquiry, and we continue to implement the recommendations, as the Commissioner said before, and other reports that are coming out from the PP, Commissioner of Stockton. And then on the next slide, I'll just talk to this Chair. We've got...
For more detail, you can refer to page 171 and 172 on our annual report. The slide doesn't project well.
This Chair is regrettable, and as an entity, we would like to ensure that going forward we cap this and we zone in onto this number. You will see that in the prior year, this number would have been reported to be zero, even though what we are reporting this year would have found its genesis in the prior years. And the fact that we did not pick it up in the audit cycle in 2018 reflects the zeros that you see in that particular column. In the first instance, we had an arrangement with a state-owned entity where we wanted to actually place some of our scanning technology that scans the cargo containers as they get declared. And unfortunately, there was change in operational plans where we needed to move that scanner from that particular site to Bait Bridge. And as a result, the lease had already been signed, and there was inertia in terms of getting out of that lease. We are engaging with the state-owned entity to recover the monies or to get out of that contract early. You'll appreciate that if you get out of the contract early, there is early termination penalties that we will pay. The second one speaks to a state warehouse in Durban called Colby State Warehouse. Again, in this instance, we had intended to move all our containers into this particular site, and over time, it so happens that we're not able to leverage that space. However, we continue to pay the rental fees on a monthly basis. I must state again that the landlord in this particular instance also did not make the site usable. So we believe that they were complicit in this wasteful and fruitless expenditure. So we've started processes to engage at a CEO level to try and recoup portions of the money. And furthermore, we engaged another state-owned entity with a plan to co-locate our academy of learning or our training center with them because they had the facility. However, mid-year, we needed to change and reconsider our stance on that. However, we'd already spent money to prepare the area. And in the cancellation of that particular contract, we then had a number of challenges. We can talk to these specific issues if the committee wants to talk to, but I think I would like to underscore my departure from the slide that as an organization, we would like to zero this amount, would like to incur no fruitless and wasteful expenditure because we understand that it affects the confidence and the trust in us being able to execute on our mandate. Commissioner, we can move off. I think that's the last one.
So that's the main body of the report. What I thought I would do is just to signpost that there's a number of things that the next 5 years provides an opportunity for Chair and members, not least of which is to say, how do we create, recreate a vision of a world-class organization with a very clear strategic path, and we are very happy to say that, as I shared with you earlier, we've started this internal process. It's the one where we can draw energy and excite people about while we do the hard and the heavy lifting. This is some of those things that put wind beneath our wings and gives us hope about what the future could look like. Of course, integral to this will be the funding that we will get from Treasury. So we have also submitted a formal representation to the Minister and our Treasury colleagues to look at the funding allocation to SARS. I'll pause there, Chair, and we can take discussion and questions.
Thanks, Commissioner, and your colleagues. So SARS and women are not in the same WhatsApp group. Commissioner. It's 99, something men. What's the issue? I'm not saying respond now. You will respond later. Let me allow members to ask questions and make comments. But we welcome the presentation. Honorable Mulet. Honorable Murolo. Honorable Nkom. Honorable Peters. Honorable Lewis. Yeah, in that order. Honorable Mavile.
You are saying management did not ensure that there was adherence to supply chain management regulations, and you even say on another bullet there, furthermore, management did not ensure that changes to the legislative framework were implemented in a timely manner and also unable to prevent irregular expenditure. What I can just say to you, the next time we see you, I think this slide might say management had made sure, because what can I say now today? Just make sure that these things are at hand. Just do it. I mean, you are saying management, and I'm looking here at brilliant, intelligent people. So what do you want me to say? I mean, I'm just a politician, and you are our guide, our advisors. We depend on you. And I also have another on page 23, it's just a comment as well, not much. Where is that 23? Where you are saying freezing of posts, just unfreeze them. Yes. Hey. Just do post. Just unfreeze them, and otherwise it's just gonna come back next year like this. Freezing due to freezing of post our markets. I can't, we are not there with you there. You are the one who knows. Just unfreeze them and do likewise and do the proper thing. Otherwise, year in, year out, freezing off. Why do you freeze them? I don't want to know. And then page 16. I can page 16 and if someone can find it quickly. On page 16 there, it is also just an advice. It has to do with, I think, banking details. I can just say, I understand because sometimes you do things electronically, but if it is possible, a person, everybody carries their ID. If you can also ask for a banking detail, I think it will lessen your problems. Because as you write it here, I mean, I don't get my money because of banking details. And tell me to bring my proof. Yes, my proof and banking detail. So everybody will be happy. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Murugan.
Well, Chairperson, I think what we need to say is that we are certainly going to keep track on issues of consequence management with respect to irregular and wasteful expenditure. There's absolutely no doubt that we'll, from time to time as a committee, pose questions about progress registered in that regard. So we can rest assured that there will be, we will continue to seek progress on these matters. I think the second point, Chair, is the fact that we are continuing to miss our revenue collection targets. Given all the factors that you've made mention of, including the issues around economic growth, do you think that the targets that we have are realistic? Do you project that we will continue to miss these targets in the next financial year? If so, what plans you have in place together with Treasury to mitigate the risk of these missed targets on the fiscus? Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the report presented by the Commissioner. One, in regards to the recommendations on the Nugent report, we would want to have a sense with how far is the institution in terms of implementing those recommendations. And secondly, on page 90, you are saying you are current on a shortfall of a particular number of employees because of the funding constraints. I just want to get a sense, do we have a plan or a strategy in place so that you address the issues of funding constraints so that employment can then be created, this shortfall can then be addressed? Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Peter.
Chairperson, I think in your opening statement after the presentation by the Commissioner and the staff leadership, you raised the issue about gender representation. And I had it in my areas of questions because on slide 22, they say the employment equity on management level, they had achieved 49.08% against the target of 49%. But it doesn't translate into what we see. And there's an indication, slide 22, an indication on the public trusted credibility. And Commissioner, in your report, in the annual report, this is what is being said, but what we see is different. So how can the public then have confidence in SARS on matters that they don't have control over when we as members of parliament see things that we really have control and ability to probably speak to you about are also reflecting like this. So I'm just saying, it is important that probably take Parliament into confidence on the challenges that SARS has with regard to attracting women of a particular competency and experience and qualifications, so as to be able to make it possible that this 49% does not refer to those who do work in areas that they are not seen, like your low-level responsibilities. Yes, if anything, I think it is important that we look at this, especially at management level, to improve on it, so that it can be something that we see. Otherwise, people would always have the image of SARS women as being that lady who said that protect me against yourselves. Maybe you are afraid of that. That's why you don't have the level. Captain, I'm going to ask a question which I don't know whether it belongs here or what. It is related to, in the previous financial year, how much did SARS collect with regard to the, I don't know whether it's called a levy or a fee, the fee that is charged to everybody who the environmental related plastics fee, because one would want to know, earlier on there was a discussion about job creation and the need for resources to make sure that we create more, create avenues for those who want to create jobs. And this would be a fund that I would believe can also alleviate the pressures that probably National Treasury has with regards to funding job creation entrepreneurs or job creation initiatives out there. The other thing is related to the pay as you earn, the challenges that you have with regard to not proper filing. Let me ask the question related to our municipalities that are not paying over to SARS the deductions that they make from the employees and the implications thereof on those municipal employees that are probably going to be found at fault by SARS for not filing properly. And I think it is important that we also get to know if there is any way in which SARS could help municipalities with the capacity to be able to make it possible that that particular aspect is attended. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, Mr. Peters. Honorable A. Lewis.
Thank you, Commissioner, and former Acting Commissioner Kingon. A couple of quick questions. Well, actually, just one main one. Last week you announced the departure of two former executives. This is a concern of mine across the civil service that senior executives who are stand accused of serious wrongdoing are able to escape consequences because they resign early. So I assume there may be some confidentiality around the cases involving those two former employees, but I would like an assurance that if there were any indication of serious wrongdoing which may or may not be criminal in nature, or which may have resulted in a significant financial loss to SARS, that the matter will not be dropped simply because they have resigned. That matter will be followed up to its conclusion, and that they will be held accountable to the law and financially if needs be. I would really like that assurance, please, on the record. And then just a comment on your presentation. SARS has come through an extremely difficult time, and I think that many of us are, and perhaps even you, are coming to grips with just how weakened the organization now is. And so I'd just like your comment
on whether you is it your experience that the organization is more unstable than you thought when you first took this job and will therefore take longer to stabilize? And do you foresee that it will be possible to see significant improvement by the time that we next meet about your annual report in 1 year's time? Thank you.
Thanks. Can we get responses from the Commissioner and your team?
Thank you. To respond with, my comments, but I think
very quickly say that you are absolutely right that it is a self-indictment when management says we have not adhered. And so to the point that was earlier made, definitely we need to firstly address the weaknesses in our system that have allowed that in the first place, and secondly hold people to account, as your colleague said, and so we are paying attention to that, so that when we do report back to you, we can report positively and not negatively. On the issue of freezing of posts, that's purely a function of not having money, and that has had many implications downstream. And we take your point about banking details challenges. I wish I had a magic wand to make that go away, but very often it's just carelessness on the part of taxpayers when we don't get their banking details, and it presents a huge risk to us. Honourable Malala, I mean, you're absolutely right. Consequence management, if you don't hold people to account, why would they change their behaviour? So you have every right to hold us to account, to follow through and report on that. Is the revenue collection targets realistic? So the way the process works is that SARS, or rather Treasury, takes input from SARS, they take input from the Reserve Bank, and then they take input from the Economic Policy Division in SARS, as well as the Tax Policy Division. And at the end of the day, we don't have a vote on it. We just give input. And so the revenue target is ultimately decided on by Treasury and confirmed by the Minister. We go to these meetings with PowerPoint presentations and Excel spreadsheets to make our case. What we have done differently this year is we have put in a formal submission to the Minister so that our view of what the revenue ought to be is on record, and not just as input into a conversation. But it's always going to create tension, what it is. What I have raised in the process this year is that we need to improve our ability to predict revenue, because there are three things, as I said in an earlier meeting, that create the number. The first is the economic environment. The second is new policies that we introduce. And the third is the compliance work that SARS performs. And we know that the revenue model at the moment relies too much on the economic data and not sufficiently on a clearer understanding of the administrative actions of SARS. So what we're trying to do this year is to amplify the focus on the work we do so that we have a better sense of what is the revenue that should come from those actions. And so there is an opportunity to improve our ability to forecast revenue. Otherwise, as I pointed out to the Minister, there's no benefit to picking the wrong number, whether it's too high or too low, because either way has unintended consequences that works against us.
Honourable Nkrumah, is there any specific issue on the Nugent report? We gave, about a month ago, we gave the committee a feedback on the Nugent Commission. What has happened in the meantime on the staffing matters, the senior staffing matters, since the last time I reported, we've resolved to separate ways with two additional of the five senior executives. There are two more that hopefully we will resolve in the next month or so. In terms of the procurement matters, we are continuing to work to follow up with the investigating authorities on the Bain matter. We have now, as I pointed out earlier on the Gardner matter, because we've been public about where we stand on it, they've now reached out and said, please can we sit down and talk about it. So hopefully they'll have a little bit more rationality when they come to that meeting. In terms of addressing the number of people who were suspended and many of whom were suspended for a reason that was really not a pure intent, we are making slow progress there because it is a high-risk thing to do, to reopen a matter, and there's a lot of opportunity for abuse. And so the progress there is fairly slow, but we are committed to continue to do that, and will probably, before the end of the year, provide the committee with another update on where we are with that. On the funding constraints, as I've pointed out now, we will take all the help we can get from this committee to ensure we get more money from, but we'll see. What the minister decides to do between now and then. Honourable Peters, nice to see you at this committee. attracting women to SARS, I think in the last 5 years, SARS has lost its... you can talk about that again. SARS has lost its ability to attract good people. And so we need to rebuild that. So it doesn't just apply to women. It also applies to just attracting good people to SARS, such as we had, you know, in the early part of this decade. We would like to get back there so that we become a sought-after employer. Today's representation, the chair asked, it's unfortunate that the current people who are acting in the main operating divisions are all male. Our senior team does have other females on it. One of them fell ill and could not travel. But I have the same ambition as you have and others that we have more of our female colleagues at senior levels. And the fact that there's now a huge opportunity for us to rebuild the senior leadership team creates the opportunity for me as the commissioner to address some of those criteria. We are committed to that. On the environmental taxes, in a moment I'll ask Johnston to talk to that. And Mark, do you want to talk to the compliance levels we find with Munich's in government? Okay, let me just continue and then I'll come back to those. Honourable Hill Lewis, you're quite right. Each of these are dealt with on its own merit. And whilst I, for very good reasons, there's a part of me that would like to take some of these things all the way to the wire, to the point where we have... So just very quickly for all the members, the way the process went is these five individuals, I informed them at the beginning of my tenure that we will be following through on the recommendations of the Nugent Commission, and to the effect that it affects them, I will engage with them. I had one-on-ones with them, and at some stage informed them that I'm taking legal advice, I'm going to pursue a process that is fair and transparent, because it affects people's lives, and ultimately one has to be diligent, and people must feel that they've been fairly dealt with as well. At some stage, I then presented each of them with a dossier to say, these are the matters that I am at the moment contemplating as it relates to you, and each of them got a very unique dossier. And I request, and these are serious enough, which if my preliminary view is confirmed, could hold serious consequences for you, including the termination of your employment with SARS. But before I draw my final conclusion, I ask you to make a written representation for me to take into account as I evaluate my performance. Each of them gave a different response. And so what does one take into account when you consider their responses? So three of them asked for a more formal disciplinary process, which we then pursued. One engaged in a very short discussion with us, and we thought it was in the best interest of the organization to conclude that. And the other two persons in the last week or so, we reached a similar conclusion. What does one take into account? Ultimately, the trade-off between the instability it causes in the organization and the longer that it draws out, and this can draw out for years as we see in other departments. You can't fill the post, you can't bring stability into the organization. There's always a risk at the end that the process may go against you, as much as you are hopeful that it will go in your favor, because it is a legalistic process. And so in the end, the best consequence that we can hope for in the case of the employment relationship is termination between the parties. Beyond that, to the extent that any individual may have to answer to a civil matter or a criminal matter, that we will follow through. I can report that in the cases of the people that we have parted ways with, as we speak now, there are no civil or criminal matters to pursue. And so it was just the employment relationship. ESARs more unstable and damaged. You know, it saddens me to say that the extent of the damage is significantly deeper than what the Nugent report says. You know, there's Afrikaans word that says papier is geduldig, paper is patient. And so what you read in the report is almost cold. But when you engage with people, when you look into their eyes, you see their pain, you see their trauma, you listen to their stories. I'll share with you an instance that I'm currently dealing with. I was asked to be seen by some staff in Cape Town on Monday. There's a class action that we have to deal with when there was a policy and a practice within SARS that prevented anyone other than an African person, and in certain instances anyone other than an African female, to apply for certain jobs. Our view is it's unconstitutional, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we are not committed to the employment equity plan. But it simply means it's unconstitutional at the front to tell someone you can't apply for this job because you won't even be considered. And so we have a class action, 92 employees down in the Western Cape who is taking us to court. And the irony is, you know, we don't really have a good case. In that, so I met with them to understand that. So that is a process that is still evolving. But that itself creates other racial tensions in the Western Cape. A second issue was at the time when certain of the auditors in the Western Cape were kind of pursuing matters that provided high risk to certain high profile people within SARS and the body politic, they needed to be marginalized. And in order to do that in a way that was not necessarily obvious, over 3,000 files, taxpayer files, were uplifted from the Western Cape, taken to Pretoria and reviewed to look for for matters that could be used against certain individuals within SARS. And that is brewing. And so I only come across these things as I go through the organization and as I find it. So the sad news that I share with you is that the damage is incalculable. It's deep. And simply changing the commissioner doesn't fix it. It is about a systemic dealing process that is required throughout the organization, and that will take long. So it's not just bringing in new people and building capability and opening up the large business center and other organizational arrangements. It's about rebuilding trust, and it's about healing the trauma that has taken place in the organization. Let me pass the baton to Johnston to talk on the environmental taxes, and then the former acting commissioner can bring his, otherwise his flight is fruitless and wasteful.
Chair, I think the question pertains mainly to the plastics bag levy. We've collected in the prior year 300 million rands in that specific tax. For this current year, in the 1.422 trillion that is our estimate, we've got 326 million that we are targeted to collect. Almost halfway through the year, we've already collected 161 million towards the 326 million. So we still hard at work in that collection. You would recall that the purpose of that levy was environmental. It was not necessarily for revenue collection. And ideally, going into the future, we would like to see that number decreasing to say that the behavioral aspect of the general populace is changing to move towards either sustainable products away from plastics. So those are the numbers in terms of what we have done in terms of that collection.
The second part of your question is outside of our scope, Honourable, in that the taxes is not ring-fenced to a particular purpose. The allocation is independent of the taxes, but you should raise that point to the relevant parties that be to say how they can use some of that money.
The Chair's not here, but Chair, are you chairing? No, Chair, members, honourable members, just with regards to the pay as you earn, I think it's a very important issue being raised with regards to municipalities. Hand in hand with that is obviously the VAT issue, because municipalities are either owing VAT or are recovering refunds as well. But we do have, and I want to assure the members, we do have teams that go out to empower the municipalities to provide what is necessary in order to fulfill their obligations insofar as pay as you earn. But what we do find is that some of the municipalities, when they're faced with paying one state entity, if we talk of Eskom maybe, where the lights will be kept on, and us, sometimes they will first pay the one and not the other. And those are challenges, because they withheld the money from the employees, and they are actually disadvantaging the employees ultimately in a way, except that we do give credit on assessment. But we are empowering them. Interestingly enough, in terms of VAT, we do find that obviously there's some of the claims we've got to evaluate in terms of audit, but the municipalities are very slow in coming forward with the documentation that we do require to evaluate the refund claims. Unfortunately, there are certain people going around the market selling what we call assisting the municipalities to claim for a commission. We have mentioned this before, and the commission charged by these agents is up to 25% of the refund garnered from SARS, and that leads to some misbehavior in the space, which does concern us, and we are addressing that. But we do have people, we've got specific teams within our business and individual tax, both within in our outreach teams, as well as we've got a team that assists with the compliance within that area.
Do we have any follow-up questions?
I'm in a quite tricky position. I've not been
given an express mandate to close this meeting. that's happened.
Maybe while you're waiting, to be more clear with each of the CEOs of the main officials, I think you want to add anything to what you said. Let me just focus on
that. Sure, sure.
Let's start in with the layers.
Chairperson, there was, I think there was a media statement, but also out of engagement with different role players, I saw that you have listed some of the tax agencies in the region as having a relationship with you with regard to the border management or border the customs area. There was, I don't know whether it's an allegation, but I'll raise it here, an indication that some of the companies of South Africa that do business in the region are subjected to some unsavory, for a lack of a better word, arrangements in on the border, on the side of Bates Bridge, where because Zimra had attached a particular, or the government of Zimbabwe had given Zimra a target to achieve, so they would, through the depot that they had created there, keep a South African business or South African transporters there for a particular period of time so that they can then be able to generate or to achieve their target. I just want to know if it's something that you can get involved in and try and see how you could, because it is actually also working against the objective of regional integration, but also making sure that the South African companies can do a business in the region. I just want to find out whether there is some veracity to that, and what is it that SARS could do.
Thank you, Commissioner, through the chair. And perhaps I'll also use that then as the 1 minute that you gave me to comment in general, because I think the topic is as wide as Bite Bridge when you start talking about regional integration. So there's certainly something that we can do. We have set platforms on a bilateral basis with Zimra, where we often seek for efficiencies at the border post, and it can serve as a platform where we can take those things up. I actually wanted to say tongue-in-cheek that they do not hold back anything specifically, they hold back everything on the Zimbabwe side, but I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. Then the second thing I wanted to say is that what becomes important for South African traders, and one of the measures that was spoken about by the Commissioner is something called Preferred Trader, which evolves into a scheme called the Authorized Economic Operator Scheme. And we are in the region working, especially within the context of SACU, hoping to expand that into SADC and then also into the African Union. We are working with them on what we call a bilateral authorized economic or multilateral authorized economic operator program, which basically means that if we can accredit our traders and we have mutual recognition with those countries, we can actually transpose the benefits that we give them on the other side of the border as well. And that's something that we're quite keen to take up in the context of our key partners in our borders. So perhaps if that answers your question.
If I could just ask Basilio, if you can give the color of, you mentioned that you had 25 matters on transfer pricing in the West, maybe give some color to that, and in doing it, you can certainly talk about
Thank you, Commissioner, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, you will recall that in line with some of the recommendations that were made by the Nugent Commission of Inquiry, there was a re-establishment of the LBC because the LPC, as you know, is one of the centers of excellence, and international best practice has always been you need to pay dedicated attention and focus to the large businesses, and more especially high net worth individuals, because of the complexity of their transactions and then the way in which they do business. So the LPC has been re-established on the 23rd of October. The commissioner will be officially launching it to announce to the business that we have, to the taxpayers, that we are back in business. And as the commissioner mentioned, one of the areas that we want to have special attention to is in relation to the base erosion and profit shifting. There is a lot of activity happening there. As we're sitting here, we've almost about 28 assessments that have been issued to some of the taxpayers, and it's big, big taxpayers. It's not just your small fish, it's the big taxpayers that we talk about. The amount thereof, we're sitting at about 1.7 billion of the amount that we now be seeking to collect from them. Obviously, they do have the financial muscle to take us to court for review and all other things, because it's not as straightforward as you issue an assessment and you get the money. So they will be taking you on review in order to ensure that they pay what they're supposed to pay. But the fact of the matter is there are activities happening there. And like I'm saying, we're going to continue to do that to make sure that we reduce the element of the profit shifting and base erosion. And in the high net worth individual space, we have done almost about 57 of the high net worth individuals. We are changing gear in that sense, in that from now on, we're going to look at them differently. And as part of the Davis Tax Committee recommendation that was made, that tax gap, we are looking at it critical to close it in terms of bringing all the high net worth individuals together with their associated entities, because we know that the funds are not, or money are not lying in their name, but they are in their associated entities in the trust, and the trust and the other legal entities that are associated with them. So we are targeting and we're looking at that very, very, very closely. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner and the Chairperson. So one of the things that we did last year was to relaunch the capability to focus on the illicit financial flows. And it's an area that I know that this committee has been concerned about for quite some time as to what work are we doing in that particular space. I just want to share some developments in terms of that. So one of the key focuses recently was to then sort of review the mandate of that particular capability and sharpen its focus. Specifically, one of the areas of focus is making sure that we collect every cent in terms of monies that have flown out of the country into foreign jurisdictions. Currently, we are settled with about seven cases that we are chasing, and the total tax opportunity there is about 5.9 billion. Obviously, it is not necessarily easy because people put up all sorts of structures and legal and litigation fights to make sure that they protect their interests. But of key importance, though, we dependent in the recovery of such monies from the, we dependent on the cooperation, rather, of the foreign jurisdictions and also, obviously, the other tax administrations of those particular countries. But so far, there is some progress, and I think we're making some inroads. Thank you.
Chair, we'll pause then and back to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner, and your colleagues, honorable members. We'll make follow-up on the issues raised by members. They have to be addressed. The issue of gender is not a window dressing, it's a constitutional requirement. It has to be addressed seriously soon. The last time you had unqualified audit with no findings was 2015-16. And these three consecutive financial years you have been receiving unqualified with finance from 16-17 until now. In the report of the AG, they've picked up National Treasury, PIC, and yourselves as the biggest transgressors in regard to supply chain, more especially SARS and Treasury, but with PIC, it's in the manner that they manage their, what do you call it, loan book, something like that. It's problematic there. There you can just go there, borrow money, and disappear. It's not an issue. It's a problem. So if you look at the report of AG, they say the biggest in terms of supply chain and irregular expenditure is National Treasury and SARS. I think yourselves, you stand at 454. And National Treasury, standard what? National Treasury is 466 million. If you look at, I'm not sure, I think you have the slide, slide 20. It's a summary of National Treasury and the entities. So it's a matter that you should address seriously, so that you can't be standing at 454 million due to non-compliance. So address all these issues, Commissioner, seriously, so. And we believe that by the time we meet next year to deal with the annual report and audit outcomes, the situation will have improved tremendously so, and we believe that there's a hope and a scope for improvement. You will deal with other issues in between, but these key issues that have been picked up by the members of the committee and the AG must be addressed. If you remember, we agreed in the last meeting with Treasury that we still have to come back and discuss the three reports, the Nugent Commission, Davis, and the Katz. So the Treasury must tell us how do they reconcile these three or two commissions and the committee. Because somewhere, somehow, they differ in terms of recommendations on the powers of the minister, the commissioner, deputy commissioners, the board. This one doesn't want the board. So you can't be in a state of limbo where we don't know which one is supposed to, which recommendations is Treasury supposed to implement. So we hope that not so long they will have done their work and come back to us. Thanks very much, honorable members, commissioner and your staff, and staff of parliament, treasurer and AG. The meeting is adjourned. Pleasure.